And welcome, welcome, welcome back to another Monday here on Fire It Up, right here on WJMSradio.com. This is Steve, I'm your host, and as always, we're going to get into the mechanics of politics as it goes forward here in the United States of America, land of the free and home of the brave. And it's been another exciting week here in the political spectrum. We're now going into 2 weeks out from the conclusion of the impeachment trial, which consumed most of the nation over the last 6 or 8 months. If you have been off the planet and haven't been tuned to a radio, television, or internet for a while, just a recap, the president was, in fact, acquitted of both articles of impeachment. No surprise there, as it went along party lines, with the singular exception of Senator Mitt Romney of Utah, who voted to impeach on one of the articles, standing alone as the only Republican to vote guilty on any of the impeachment articles, and catching an absolute firestorm of rebuke from Republican and conservative people across the country. So what's happened in the world since the conclusion of the impeachment process? Well, the president has been on what could arguably call not a victory tour, but a vendetta walk, taking out his frustration with people that sided against him by firing Colonel Vindman, who was one of the senior military advisors in the White House, along with his twin brother, for testifying against him. Also recalling U.S. Ambassador to the European Union, Ambassador Sondland, to the U.S., and then firing him once he set foot on U.S. soil. And finally, within 24 hours of the conclusion, the president's attorney general issued an instruction to the Department of Justice that no investigation of the by the FBI of any administration officials or employees tied to the White House could move forward without his express written permission. Let that percolate for a second. Basically, to understand, the role of the legislative branch is to serve as an oversight body over the executive branch. The role of the Department of Justice is, through the FBI and other law enforcement agencies, to investigate allegations of wrongdoing brought forward by either the legislative or the executive branch on the other branch. So if none of those legislative branch investigations involving the executive branch can go forward without the express authorization from the Attorney General, whose job it is, among other things, to sit in charge of investigations over the executive branch, then basically there is no one watching the chicken coop, and the chickens can run amok as they please. So then the net result, in my opinion, as we come out of the post-impeachment time frame and all of these actions, is that the executive branch, and in particular the President of the United States, has been given something of a carte blanche to do whatever he or she in the future will want to do without fear of pressure or consequence or oversight from the legislative branch. That is a fundamental shift in the co-equal status of the three legs of our government. The legislative branch, as I said, serves as the controller of the money for the government and has oversight function over the executive branch. The executive branch is charged with overseeing and enforcing the laws of our country as defined by the Constitution and all of the precedents that come down from it. So if no oversight can occur over one branch by the other, then there really is, no guardrails on the system. And to be aware and to think about this for a second, this not only applies at the federal level. Going forward in the future, if a state governor violates a state law and a state legislature seeks to exercise its oversight authority over said governor, there is now a precedent, not necessarily a law that says it's okay, but there is a precedent in place where that governor can refuse to provide witnesses, can refuse to provide documents, can basically stonewall any investigation against his or her administration at the state level and on down the line. So, you know, a fundamental shift in how our government accounts for itself has occurred as the result of the presidential impeachment trial that just concluded a few weeks ago. Kind of define the box, in which all of this fits a little bit. Over the course of this show, since its start, I've given periodic information about kind of the underlying history and structures and elements that make up the positions that are currently being taken by members of our government, both Republican and Democrat, over the course of our current events. You know, we talked about something called the Southern Strategy, which is a 50-year-old process enacted by the conservative politicians in our country, notably the Republicans, to basically build a bulletproof political structure in this country comprised of state legislatures and state governorships in order to, number one, lock down their control of the political process in our country, and number two, to serve as kind of the minor league or the farm club or the AAA team for future national political leaders. Both parties utilize this structure to build up their political teams at the national level by having people gain experience and expertise at the state and local level. They flow from the bottom to the top. Well, if as it is right now, the Republican Party controls the majority of state legislatures and state governor's offices, they in fact are calling the shots on not only, our political makeup, but also the future of where, politics and where our country is going to go as a constitutional democracy. So, the Southern Strategy, as I said, was instituted some 50-something years ago and has been ongoing ever since. And as a result, most of the districts in the country, the majority of them at least, currently occupied by Republicans. Democrats have made inroads over the course of time, and most notably in the immediate past election cycle in 2018, but there's still work to be done if they hope to swing the country from being majority red to being more equal blue, and basically also to make sure that the political nature of this country reflects the broad spectrum of people in our country, most of whom are neither far right or far left, but really kind of centrist in the middle voters. The second point that we've talked about, and this is related to this Southern Strategy as it's one of the tactics used, is called gerrymandering, where congressional districts, as defined every 10 years as a result of the census, are laid out based on the party that has the numerical advantage in the election. That is, who won overall the state, they get to decide how the congressional districts for the federal House of Representatives are defined based on how many, Democrats and how many Republicans each district will contain. As the Republicans control the process, they get to draw the districts that most favor Republican candidates, thereby ensuring that there is a steady stream of Republican control and that, as I said, the Farm Club can continue to send a flow of, experienced candidates up the chain to take on national positions. So gerrymandering is an action arm of the Southern strategy, along with, you know, efforts at suppressing the vote and other impediments put in place to reduce the number of Democratic and independent voters, particularly those that are disenfranchised, as in minorities, you know, poor whites, working class whites, and people of color, from exercising their vote, because historically and statistically, these groups tend to vote overwhelmingly Democratic, not Republican. So in order to overcome the numerical disadvantage that Republicans have in this country, Republicans represent about 28% of the, you know, registered voters in the United States. Democrats are about 29%, plus or minus a few decimal points, of the registered voters. Independents, however, as of a recent poll by the Pew Foundation, are 41% of the American electorate. So the more of the independent and Democratic votes that can be suppressed, the better it stands for Republican candidates to succeed in their run for political office. So the numbers actually favor non-Republicans. These efforts work to try and even that balance and tilt that balance back more in the Republicans' favor. So, you know, you have these three things, among others, that are actively used in order to control and mitigate advantages in the electorate in favor of one party over the other. Now, when you have that in the background, and when you look at, you know, the recently completed impeachment process, as we've all been just, you know, inundated with information, and recognize that that decision was straight down party lines, you know, 57 Republicans, 43 Democrats, you see where the effectiveness of those three strategies comes into being. And, you know, combine that with, you know, as I've said, that in regards to impeachment, both parties absolutely failed the American people. And I'll tell you why. Again, in my opinion. Number one, the Republican Party failed because they controlled their members so tightly through whatever kind of leverage they have, so that even though there were a significant number of Republican senators who believed that the actions of the president were wrong, they stuck to the party dogma that it was not, quote, impeachable, close quote, even though it was wrong. So except for, you know, the one lone Republican senator who voted no, all the other Republicans who disagreed with what the president did still stayed within the party boundaries and voted to acquit. Now, you can go back and look at the record, look at what was presented and all of that, and come to your own conclusion. But in the end of the day, the senators and congressmen are sent there to do what is right and what is the wishes of the American people. And overwhelmingly, the American people wanted to see additional testimony, additional witnesses, and actually believe that the president was wrong and should be impeached and removed from office. They ignored that. So foul called on the Republican Party. Foul is also called on the Democrat Party because they didn't come with their A game. Now, that's not to say that the case they put on was not well articulated, was not detailed, was not, you know, full of information that was valuable to a decision-making process on impeachment. Where they failed was that they did not go far enough. They rushed into the impeachment, in my opinion. They should have taken the time, worked harder, gone to court, did whatever they needed to do to try and get those additional documents and those additional witnesses in place. they hung the impeachment process up to dry in favor of the upcoming elections in November because, and the Republicans are guilty of this as well on the other side, neither side wanted to do anything that was going to influence the election in November to go against their party. The Democrats feared a backlash in the country because they dared to impeach the president. The Republicans feared a backlash in this country should they have voted to impeach the president because they stepped away from where the base wanted them to be. So both parties failed us, flat, full stop, period. And you know, you can argue the point with me. If you want to send me an email, you can send an email to the show at fireituparadio@yahoo.com. I'll be more than happy to take your question, and we can have a discussion in an upcoming episode as to, you know, what that's all about. But, you know, there is a reason why we elect officials and send them to be our representatives in government, whether it's at the local level, the state level, or the federal level. It is to do the wishes of the people. So it strikes me as strange when the majority of people in the country favor one thing over another, and our elected officials, again, our representatives, vote in the exact opposite direction. You have to ask what's going on in the background. Is it money? Is it, you know, some other kind of leverage? You know, I'll put it out there. Is it blackmail? What is making elected officials who should be doing what we sent them to their office to do the exact opposite? So something to consider and think about right there. The other thing to understand, and we've talked about this, and you know, we've talked about some of the things that have occurred. We've talked about the branches of government. You know, we talk about how, because there are three branches that are supposed to be co-equal, we can next talk about what are the mechanisms, what's the mechanics that go into having this contrarian agenda happen in our system of government. Well, you need look no further than, you know, as I mentioned about the Attorney General issuing instructions that no investigation of administration officials can occur without his express permission, to indicate another place where some of this problem lies. When you have officials that are put in place into positions that are supposed to be apolitical, that is nonpartisan, and yet they execute a purely partisan agenda, that's a problem. Because, you know, especially when we're talking about our laws are supposed to be fair and equal. That is, justice is supposed to be equal for everyone. And, you know, when you have, you know, another piece of current events, one of the president's close advisors, Roger Stone, who is approaching conviction for seven counts that he was found guilty of, and is facing a jail sentence of, you know, 7 to 9 years or a little bit more, now comes Attorney General Barr and President Donald Trump telling the Justice Department that they think that sentence is too strict and to revise those guidelines down to a lower amount of time. So, okay, Roger Stone looks like he's going to catch a break in his sentencing. There are thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of other people awaiting sentencing for crimes where their sentences are, you know, set at the high end of sentencing guidelines. And the question becomes, well, what about these people? Do they get to have their sentences reviewed in light of, you know, the leniency that's being showed to Roger Stone? You know, our justice system is supposed to be fair. If it's fair for one, should it not be fair for all? You know, and, you know, you can argue that, you know, they've gone after Roger Stone, you know, for whatever reason, you know, his connections, his in-your-face attitude, but he was convicted by a jury of his peers of the crimes of which he was accused, one of which was an implicit threat against the judge and witness tampering, which are two of the most serious crimes that you can face in this country. Because we value our justice system so much, we work that much harder to protect it. And yet, you know, he is being advocated for this more lenient sentence by the number one law enforcement officer in our country, that is the Attorney General of the United States, who is specifically charged with upholding the law in this country, and, you know, being influenced, having the sentence being influenced by the President of the United States, who at the time of his inauguration swore an oath to uphold and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic, and is now placing his wishes, what would make him happy, above what is best for the country. You know, and if you go back to the impeachment, if you watched it, Professor Alan Dershowitz of Harvard University gave an impassioned argument for why the president, you know, can do this, why he has the power and authority to do this, through a statement of, you know, if he has something to accomplish that is in his best interest as president, and therefore, because of that, is in the best interest of the country, then that action cannot be punishable or impeachable. So basically, a get out of jail card free. This is where we have come to. All right, and you know, it gives us room, and it gives us pause to think about, you know, what are our options. What can we do about this? What is the action steps that we need to take in order to bring our country more back toward the representative democracy that it is supposed to be, rather than just a country that responds to the wishes of the occupant of the Oval Office or the occupant of the corner office in your state house? You know, this is a land of the people, by the people, and for the people, not of the president, by the president, and for the president. So something to think about. We're going to take our first break right here, and when we come back on the other side, we're going to pick up probably what is going to be an extended call to action segment. I want to talk about, you know, some of the specific things we can do from the federal level down to the local level to begin to address and restore the balance in our country. So we'll be right back after the break. You're listening to Fire It Up. This is Steve. We'll come right back. Thanks for tuning in. You're on WJMSradio.com.
Everybody
back. To give a little background on something, I typically record these shows at the end of the week prior to the Monday they air. That's either, you know, on a Friday or a Saturday. And in between the segments, after I completed recording the first segment that you've just heard, I got some alerts through my Twitter feed from NBC News and a few other sources that talked about something related to what I discussed in the first segment. It apparently is come to light that Attorney General Barr, not only has he recommended a reduction in the sentence for former presidential counsel Roger Stone, but he's also appointed an independent investigation of the former defense administrator, Michael Flynn, to review his case and conviction and look for improprieties, as well as a bunch of other unnamed, unknown cases that may not have yet reached the public sphere, you know, whether it's because it's a sealed indictment or, you know, a trial hasn't started or charges haven't been conferred. But nonetheless, the president and his attorney general apparently are looking into these cases to look for ways of influencing the outcomes. And this goes back to what I was talking about in the first segment, how, you know, this action severely undercuts the rule of law in our country and opens the gate for a wide range of abuses of power and corruption and other things for which there will be little or no legal or, you know, congressional or government recourse. And that's a worrisome thing. You know, we are a nation of laws. No one, and we've heard this said, no one is supposed to be above the law, up to and including the President of the United States. Well, it seems like, you know, the powers that be in this country are taking, you know, mighty efforts to undermine, if not eliminate, that little factoid that, you know, they, specifically, you know, the president and other members of his administration, can be above the law via the way that they, you know, will not be prosecuted or held accountable for it. So, you know, keep an eye on this, stick a pin in it, keep following it. You know, it's all part of, you know, staying aware, staying educated, being up to date. So just wanted to pass that along as that came in, as I said, in the midst of me recording this episode of Fired Up in between segments. So to get into what I wanted to talk about in this segment, which, you know, falls in line with this, you know, we're going to take a little diversion from our normal course of having, you know, independent segments and then a call to action segments. I'm going to roll the call to action right here into segment two and kind of do an A to Z of what things we, the people, need to be engaged with, need to be active with, what we need to be doing if our goal is to change the course of how the political machine in our country operates. Now, I tend to work very hard at keeping my politics out of my broadcasts. I try and research and present and discuss, you know, from both political party sides of the argument as fair and objectively as I can. And I like to think I'm mostly successful at it. So in spirit of that, we'll start with, you know, those out there who, you know, are Democratic or independent and who most likely for one reason or another are in opposition to the policies and platforms of this president and the administration. What we need to be doing, what you guys need to be active about in that regard is looking at where your elected officials stand with regard to these important party platform decisions and, you know, platforms of the United States and where the Democratic and Independent parties fall into those. So, you know, there are a number of platforms and other issues, especially in this election year. And we're going to look a little bit at those as we go through this, you know, A to Z in our call to action. And one of the things I found in doing my research for the show is the website for Politico, politico.com, has a list of the election issues that are the main focus in the current run-up to the November election, and where each of the current Democratic candidates stand. I'll post a link to that both on my Twitter feed, at RUFiredUp. I will also post it on my Facebook page at Fired Up Radio, and that's under facebook.com/firedupradio. Those will go up over the weekend and will be available by the time the show airs on Monday. So it lists the major topics driving the election discussions, things like global warming and climate change, the economy, education, etc., etc., and where each of the Democratic candidates stand on those issues. I ask that you go check it out. I suggest you go check it out so that you get a sense of where the candidates on the Democratic side who are running for president, where they stand in, you know, part one and part two, so that you have a sense of what these issues are, so that as you address your state and local candidates for office, you can have an informed discussion and question and answer session with them. The second part of that is, and another link that I will post both to my Twitter and to my Facebook page, is from ballotpedia.org, and it is a list, a state-by-state list, of all of the upcoming local elections that are happening, whether it's governor, you know, lieutenant governor, state legislature, state senate, you know, ballot initiatives, local elections, all up and down the line listed state by state. So it's a great resource for you to find out what's happening in your particular state in terms of elections that are going to occur between now and the national election in November. And again, so that you can get engaged, so that you can get active, so that you can get informed as to what's going on and engage with the candidates, find out their positions, and make sure that your positions are known as the elections come up, come due, and the winners are declared. You know, part of our role in being more than just woke, in being more than just aware, is to be engaged, is to be taking action proactively, is to be out there finding out the facts from as many sources as possible. I always, always stress this. Don't just get your news from one, you know, social media platform or one TV news show or cable news show, whether it's on the right or on the left. You really should engage with views from all sides so that you have a full picture of what the arguments are, pro and con, from both directions. That way, you can be more informed, more strategic, more tactical in how you address the issues that are facing you, whether it's at the local level, the state level, or the national level. Get out there, dig into it, dig deeper, dig wider, find the facts, form your opinions, ask the questions. That's the process that we need to follow. So those two websites will be posted to my media outlets. You know, again, facebook.com/firedupradio, and on Twitter, it's at @RUFiredUp, at RUFiredUp. So check those out and make sure that you stay aware and informed. You know, we've talked about in our call to action segments over the weeks that we've been doing the show. We started off with voter registration and things that we must do to overcome any efforts at suppressing or marginalizing or disenfranchising you or people in your community or your circles from getting to the polls and casting your votes in elections. Number one, always make sure that you go to the appropriate entities, find out what your voter status is. Are you a currently registered voter? Is the address they have for you, is that correct? Is it your current address? What do you need to bring with you on election day in order to prove your right to vote? So there is a website, it's called vote.org. If you go to that website, you can enter your state and go down to your locality, and it will tell you where your polling places are, what's the requirements for identification, any of the things that you need to bring with you, because it varies state to state. Some states, all you need is a current valid photo ID. That could be a driver's license, it could be a passport, could be a photo ID card if you don't drive, but something that has your picture on it, your current address, and you can use that to identify yourself. Other states may have additional requirements. They may require you to bring a telephone bill or an electric bill or something else to prove occupancy in the residence where you're listed as living. Make sure that you have all those materials. If you are not listed as a registered voter, then you need to get down to your city hall or register online or do whatever steps are outlined in the process to get yourself registered, to make sure that you are actively on the voter rolls. Because as we've talked about in the show, there are active efforts through voter suppression at purging people who have not voted for a while. You could get purged off the list. So you need to make sure that your name is there, that it's correct, that it points directly to you, and that you have all of whatever information you need with you on the day that you go to the polls. The next thing we've talked about in our call to action is getting involved with your local candidates. Find out who's running for local offices. And remember, it's not just president, vice president, it's not your senator, your congressman in Washington. It's your governor, it's your state senator, it's your state congressman. It could be your mayor, your town council, or your city council. It can be your school board. It can be judges. All of these people in parts of the country are elected officials. And as such, we need to make sure that we understand where they're coming from, what their platform is. Is it in line with what we think? If the candidates that are out there are not talking about an issue that's important to you, such as, new textbooks in our school systems, such as, safety in our schools, busing, public transportation, libraries, roads, bridges, and infrastructure. If your local representatives are not engaged with these elements, these are what are important to you day to day, then you need to be having that conversation with them. You need to be going to their meetings or their town hall meetings or your city council meetings or your school board meetings and voicing your opinions, and do it over and over and over again. The more that you let them know that we are watching them and that we are holding them accountable, the more we will begin to move to combat this attack on the rule of law in our local government as well as our national government. And that is key to making our country represent what the people think, not just what the lobbyists and the moneyed elite think is best for all of us. The next thing that we've talked about in our call to action segments is getting involved with local activities. If there's something you are passionate about and there is a local level office that handles that. For example, if you're concerned, you have school age children, you're concerned about the education they're receiving. If they are not giving a full and broad picture of, American history, or if they're going too far with covering other topics that you think deserve less attention than what they're getting, one of the ways you can affect that change is to actually become part of the mechanism that makes that change. So, consider running for local office, whether it's your school board, whether it's your town council, your board of selectmen, it's your town manager. Get engaged and get involved in the actual mechanics of doing the will of the people at the political level. It could be something that you find extremely fulfilling. Consider running for office as a way to becoming the change that you seek to have happen. In relation to that, again, it goes back to making sure that you are engaged in your community. Reach out to your circle of friends. Reach out to your church groups, your school groups, your alumni associations, whatever groups that you belong to. Start to engage with them in conversations about topics like voter registration. Are you registered to vote in this election? Are you going to vote in this election? And effect change and make that happen in your local area. You can go down to your city hall or wherever your registrar of voters are and get a supply of voter registration mail-in cards and keep them with you so that, if you're talking, at lunch, or if you're talking, in the mall or whatever, and somebody says, well, no, I'm not registered to vote, hand them a voter registration card. Explain to them how, if they're not part of the voting process, that they are handing control of their lives over to some other group of people to run for them. And it is important that as many people as possible get out and vote. Whichever political party you belong to, you have to get out and support your party and support what they're doing and let them know that we are watching them. And if they are not going to do what we elected them into office, that when that term is up, we will show them the door. So, make sure that you are prepared not only to engage conversationally, but that you are ready to take that action step of handing them a voter registration card and encouraging them to fill it out and get it in the mail so that they get registered. Related to that, one of the big action items for 2020 is the census. Now, as you've probably heard, because I know I've mentioned it at least four or five times over the last, weeks and months, 2020 is what is known as a census year. Every 10 years, the Constitution requires the federal government to take account of all residents, all people living in the United States and its territories. Now, that doesn't mean all registered voters. That doesn't mean, all people of one group or another. It means everyone who lives in this country, whether, they are, regardless of their political party, every man, every woman, every child, whether they are a citizen, whether they are a resident alien, they have a green card, or whether they are, a resident without paperwork, they are required to be counted. And it's extremely important that we make this count happen. The count of residents in this country goes to determine many, many things. First and foremost, it goes to determine how many and where the citizens are that are represented in the individual congressional delegates for Congress in Washington, D.C. Basically, in a nutshell, there are 435 members of the House of Representatives in Washington. The entire population of the country is divided by that 435 to determine how many constituents each congressperson has. So that is determined through the census. When that final headcount is ratified, then the process of reapportionment, that is, apportioning the number of residents per congressional representative, is decided, and a district map is drawn that collects that number of people into a distinct district that congressperson will represent. That is probably the most important thing that the census does beyond establishing a physical headcount in this country. But additionally, the census plays a critical role in things like allocation of federal dollars to states and communities and local areas and so forth for things like roads, for things like new schools or upgrading school systems. If there's been a substantial shift in the number of school children, either in or out of a district, then changes need to be made to the school systems. Probably if you look around your community, there may be some new schools that are being built. This is actually in response to data that was collected in the prior census that is now being applied at the local level. And those decisions are made based on census count. Highway funding. If there's funding needed for new highways, for expanding our existing roads, for rebuilding bridges or strengthening bridges, for new infrastructure projects, for expanding the support for our first responders, new fire engines, new ambulances, new police cars, new radio systems, communication, new safety systems, new protection systems for our first responders come out based on dollars allocated from the results of the census. So there is a whole range of things, healthcare services, expansions of hospitals, expansions of medical programs, expansions of outreach into communities for elder care, for senior care, for meals to feed the homeless. All of these things are determined by the information gathered in the census. And it is vitally important that when that census request comes to you, which it will in the next couple of weeks, that you fill it out completely and count every resident in your household. There are multiple ways to do it. The easiest and quickest way is to complete the card that they send you and mail it back. That is also the most sure way to make sure that it is counted and isn't subject to some electronic glitch. But you can fill the census out online. It's presented in 12 different languages, as well as mechanisms with videos and actors using American Sign Language for people who are hearing impaired. There are copies in Braille that you can get from your city or town offices. There are all kinds of methods to make sure that there is a mechanism for every citizen in this country to be counted, and we need to make that happen. It is vitally important that resources get allocated both from a congressional standpoint, to a dollar standpoint, to a resource and understanding standpoint that is key based on information that comes from the census. So please, please fill out that card when it comes to you. It is totally identity blind. It is not tied to your personal identification in any way. It is merely a count of who lives where in this country. So, that's what's going on. We have a lot of things to be engaged with. We're going to continue to stay engaged. My goal is to make sure that I help you be as informed as possible, as aware as possible, and give you as many action options as I possibly can. If you have ideas or suggestions for things to look into, again, shoot me an email to the show at firedupradio@yahoo.com. I tweet out of @RUFiredUp. That's A-R-E, the letter U, fired up, and that's on Twitter. And stay in touch and subscribe to my Facebook page at facebook.com/firedupradio, where I'll always have information, updates, useful tips, pointers to things to do in response to our action items. The bottom line is we have to, as citizens of this country, regardless of our political persuasion, as citizens of this country, we have to be engaged, we have to be aware, we have to hold our elected officials accountable to us, because if we don't, then we're going to end up with a country that we did not intend to be created. We are going to end up living in something that is not America. So I will talk to you again in 7 days. Have a great week. You're listening to Fire It Up. My name is Steve. You're right here on WJMSradio.com. I appreciate you tuning in. Have a great week, and we'll talk to you in 7 days.